Thank you for downloading Profile from the BBC. This week, we turn our gaze to man of the moment, the actor Benedict Cumberbatch.
Sofa tonight, Britain's most famous detective, Sherlock star, Benedict Cumberbatch.
One of our biggest stars, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Please welcome Benedict Cumberbatch.
The man they call Britain's favourite otter.
He's not just an otter. He's been a dragon, Julian Assange, Stephen Hawking. Now he takes on the role of Alan Turing, the tortured but brilliant codebreaker in the film The Imitation Game.
You will be executed for high treason.
Who are you?
Alan Turing, one of the best mathematicians in the world.
Welcome to Enigma.
It's the greatest encryption device.
And his star continues to rise. Next year, we'll be able to see his Hamlet at the Barbican. At least a few of us will. The tickets for the show were the fastest selling in London's theatre history. The world is a rich canvas for observation, he said. This week, it's our turn. We're taking a look at him.
Well, I used to say he was an old soul. He was about 48, I think, when I knew him. Although, actually, physically, he was 13.
And we start here, at the boys' public school, Harrow. Martin Tyrrell was his former drama teacher, directing him in several plays. Sitting in the stalls of the theatre, we had a gossip about one of his most famous former pupils.
He started off, for me, in the very important part of a saucy French maid in Phaedo's A Flea in Her Ear. And first thing I can remember about him is, well, I said, would you come on and throw your hands up in shock?
Be
and,
a bit saucy, in
yes, and wriggle your bottom and then move right. And he said, is it all right if I threw my arms up later and timed it slightly differently? And he was 13 at the time, and he was absolutely right. That's what he should do. He was a very, very careful and meticulous boy.
With Ben, you think he is, in my memory, the parts he played.
I mean, that's so interesting. And what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that he is, I think of Ben, and I think of him playing Rosalind in As You Like It. I think of him being a character in City of Angels, a musical we did here.
But his first big part at school was as Arthur Crocker Harris in Ratigan's The Browning Version. My job was to make schoolmasters' wives weep with recognition, he said. And they did. Anne Hall Williams has been behind the scenes at the Harrow School Theatre since she was 16.
He went onto the stage here and he turned his back to the audience. And it was quite extraordinary. First of all, just his hands. He started to clench and unclench his fists. They were right, his arms were by his side. And his head was bowed and then his shoulders started just to shake. And then very slowly, the sobs came. And he just went into this complete emotional meltdown until his entire body was just racked with sobs. It was raw and it was so, so moving, I can't tell you. And it just absolutely tore the heart out of you to watch it. And nobody laughed.
There was no sniggering.
No sniggering, nothing.
His actor parents would have preferred their son to take on another career.
Tim and Wanda were determined that he should not enter the theatre easily, as it were. They wanted him to be anything else. But I'm afraid that they came to see the Browning version and I found Wanda looking very sad in the foyer and afterwards. And she said, you know, this is it. He's obviously going to be an actor. This is what he wants to do.
So they resigned themselves,
yeah, resigned themselves to that, yeah.
His course was set. He took a gap year and volunteered as an English teacher in a Tibetan monastery in India, on to Manchester University to study drama, followed by the London Academy of Music and Drama. He was a jobbing actor, but in 2004 came a big break, the starring role in Hawking, playing the physicist Stephen Hawking, and was spotted by film producer Lynn Horsford.
He was exceptional in that. We were in the middle of pre-production onto The Ends of the Earth, and we saw that, and we all gave a collective sigh of relief that we had found our Edmund Talbot.
I do not sir.
They decamped to South Africa. It was a hugely demanding role, and he had his first sex scene. Not very sexy, Cumber fans. It was filmed in a cabin the size of a large coffin. But it was here that Benedict had one of the most traumatic, life-changing experiences. Lynn picks up the story.
We'd been filming for some months and perhaps had become rather relaxed about the realities of working in South Africa. And one weekend, Benedict and another one of the South African actors, Theo Landi, and Denise Black, who was playing another of the characters in the film, went to a World Heritage site just north of Richards Bay. They drove home that evening, on the Sunday evening, getting ready for the shoot the next day, and their car was hijacked.
God, that must have been such a shock.
It was really a very traumatic experience, I think, for everyone involved.
And how long were they held for?
I think it was 2 or 3 hours.
That's when quite some time, isn't it?
It is actually a long time. It's a time when you don't... I think they handled it, in retrospect, extremely well. But I think Benedict has spoken about it, you know, fairly recently and said it was, for him, one of the most traumatic experiences that he'd ever had and made him look at life slightly differently because you realise how precious it is and how easily it can change.
Then in 2010... The BBC's television series Sherlock. It would propel Benedict Cumberbatch to superstardom and attract thousands of dedicated fans around the world.
We get so many messages and tweets and emails from your... Now, they're not Cumberbatches anymore, are they?
They change name every time I'm on.
OK, well, what are they now?
Cumber People Collective,
Cumber People.
Bunches, brands...
It's very trim.
Very trim.
I think he's going back to ginger.
Sort of silvery suit.
Yeah.
Very amazing.
Yeah, I hope he's eating enough.
And he did that thing that we love. That we love.
When he touches his leg.
Oh, no, that's not what I mean.
Oh, that's the thing that I love.
No, I mean, you know when he does it.
Take these three New Zealand women, Abby Howells, Kate Schrader and Caitlin McNaughton, members of the comedy collective Discharge. They thought their obsession was killing them, and so they wrote the tongue-in-cheek comedy Benedict Cumberbatch Must Die. They're infatuated with the actor and his alter ego.
Episode 2, season 3, is that the latest Sherlock? When he does the best man speech,
oh my God.
Like, I'm in. Like, you've won me. You've won my heart forever.
I am the most unpleasant, rude, ignorant, and all-round obnoxious arsehole that anyone could possibly have the misfortune to meet. I am dismissive of the virtuous, unaware of the beautiful, and uncomprehending in the face of the happy. So if I didn't understand I was being asked to be best man, it is because I never expected to be anybody's best friend.
By the third series of Sherlock, aired earlier this year, it had become the BBC's most watched TV series in a decade, won more than 20 international awards. 38-year-old Benedict Cumberbatch basked at a new level of fame in the UK and globally.
How many times have you watched that?
I don't like to say in public. Many times.
Anne Hall Williams again.
Ben grew his hair and he has his long coat, so he looks very Byronic, and everybody really loves Byron, this romantic sort of very sexy person. And
did you think he looked quite sexy?
I think he did. Oh, yes, I don't think he should ever cut his hair. And I think he should always go around with long hair and long coats. Absolutely. And I do think, in a way, it is that character that brought him to people's notice as a sex symbol, if you like, because he'd been around doing lots of plays. When he was playing Stephen Hawkins, nobody thought he was a sex symbol then.
Look at those cheekbones. I could cut myself slapping that face. Would you like me to try?
I keep looking at this and thinking, you know, Benedict, what is this sex appeal? I can't quite get it.
Martin Tyrrell, his drama teacher at Harrow again.
But I think it has something to do with his being remarkably gentlemanly, with a twinkle in his eye, which suggests, perhaps, what these so-called cumber bitches want.
That twinkle, they see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
He had it as a saucy French maid, I should say.
Oh, do you think so? From that very time he was on the stage.
But in those days, we used to say, go out and play rugby.
Yes.
That got rid of that. Yes.
None of that saucy French maid business.
No. Take that skirt off, Cumberbatch. Yes.
Sherlock opened more doors for him. Hollywood beckoned. He played the villain, Khan, in Star Trek, appeared alongside A-listers Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts, and in Steve McQueen's 12 Years a Slave. He is, as some would say, living the dream. Has it changed him? It might surprise some that he still makes the time to appear in the humble Radio 4 comedy Cabin Pressure, which he started performing in 6 years ago and is written by comedian John Finnemore.
We've heard quite a lot about this actor being kind of some superstar, a massive heartthrob. You know, as you say, all these crowds of girls turned up to see him. What's he actually like?
It's going to be a very dull answer, but he's a very nice, normal, down-to-earth actor. He's a very nice guy. Nor did he particularly change after he started having to leave the recording in order to fly to Tokyo to promote Star Trek.
Is he huggable?
Is he huggable? Yes.
Have you hugged him?
I have hugged him, yes. I have had that pleasure. And there was also a moment in Cabin Pressure where, in the last series, his big brother is a character, and the idea was that Martin is intimidated by his big brother, although his brother loves him, but is patronising towards him, and, for instance, whenever he sees him, picks him up and spins him round like an aeroplane.
Anyway, hug?
No, and I'll crease my uniform, my captain's uniform.
Oh, I don't think so. Looks pretty polyester-tastic to me. Come here!
Don't lift me, please, don't lift me!
Up we go!
Now, there's no reason for Justin to actually pick him up during the recording, given that it's radio, but they both decided that it would be fun for the audience if he did. And so I held the script and Justin picked up Benedict and whirled him around.
I mean, do you look at him and just think, yeah, I mean, here is a heartthrob?
I suppose I do now that I've seen him play those parts, but he's such a good actor that when he's playing nervous, unconfident Martin, he seems sort of nervous and unconfident and therefore not particularly like a heartthrob. And then, of course, you see him in any of his more famous roles and, yeah, he's clearly an extremely handsome man.
But what about down the pub, you know, when you are having that glass of wine in the Italian?
Right. Am I transfixed by his cheekbones?
Are you? Do you look at the cheekbones and think, my, they're high? Ever? Have you ever?
Have I ever looked at his cheek? Yes, I think I have. I think I've been transfixed like everyone else.
In a recent article, TV critic Michael Hogan dared to question the hype and got short shrift from the Cumber fans. Have we reached peak Cumberbatch?
I think we have, actually. I think that's enough Benedict Cumberbatch for now, thank you. My day job's a TV critic, and I really like Sherlock, and I really loved him 10 years ago in Hawking. I think he's a very sort of strong TV actor. You know, you put him up there with our best sort of youngish TV actors. But his film career isn't anything particularly special, and I just think that he's got undue attention for the talent that he has at the moment. Honestly, I'm not trying to bring him down. I think he's a good actor, and he's a nice bloke. But that's it. He's a nice, normal, you know, boringly normal in a way bloke. It's less Benedict Cumberbatch that I've got any sort of problem with. It's more the Benedict Cumberbatch industry and theme park that seems developed around him, which I think is sort of disproportionate and a bit daft.
What I like is, you know, there are all sorts of words, aren't there, that go with his name. You come up with a few yourself, don't you? Give me some of the words that you use.
I called him Dumbleditch, Custard Catch, Undersnatch, Coddle Fatch.
But what does one of his most constant fans, the man who directed him all those years ago, like to call him?
You call him Benedict, of course, because, well, that's his name. But at school, he was known as Ben. Ben changed his name to Benedict, and we all had to practice saying that for about 4 years. And I did suggest at one point that he took a stage name, and he thought of the idea of Ben Cumber, till he worried about the fact that filmmakers would shout, "Q Cumber," or something like that.
Profile was presented by Becky Milligan and produced by me, Gemma Newby. You can hear more programmes like this on the BBC website.